Hi, it's Leah down here from OCI Radio and 101.6 FM for the Costa del Sol and 94.6 FM for the Costa Blanca. You're all very welcome to the show today. And indeed, you're all very welcome to the show today. Now, my guests in the studio are Martin and Marion Sheeran from Elite Clinics in Fuengirola. Hi, you guys.
Hiya.
Hi. How are you doing? All right there, Marion. I need more input this week, more input. And they've brought a very special guest. We're doing Rachel's story, as I've called it now. It's Rachel Jameson, who was a bulimic for 15 years. Rachel, you're very welcome back.
Hi.
I'm sorry, this is a long haul for you. I'm sure it can't be that easy to be going over this, except that we will have a success at the end of the day, yeah?
We will.
Yeah, you're sitting here with us. You're looking well. Fine. So listen, you headed off, just to remind people, you've been suffering, at this point now, how long have you been suffering before you headed off to South Africa?
South Africa, that was October 2007.
And so how long had you been suffering from bulimia at that stage?
14 and a half years.
God almighty, it's amazing, isn't it? 14 and a half years, jeepers, as you say, half your life. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay, so what brought on this trip to South Africa? Whose idea was it? Did you go along with it? You know, tell us the details about that.
Well, I just moved to Spain with my partner. He had a job in Spain.
Oh, right. What brought you to Spain? Just as a byline?
His job. He's ironically a chef. So.
Okay, yeah. Oh, he's a chef.
I came to Spain with him and... Previously to that, we'd been living in Australia because he's Australian.
Oh, right, okay.
And like I said, I mean, everywhere I moved, whether it be city or country, I was looking for fresh starts, and I thought
Jeepers.
This would be the time
when
I would change. Unfortunately, it didn't matter where I was in the world by that point.
Yeah.
So we'd moved to Spain, and I'd vowed to change again, you know, beautiful place. I thought,
how long had you been with your partner at this stage?
Nearly 2 years.
So he was totally aware of what was going on, yeah?
Absolutely aware.
And you'd promised him that this was going to be,
this was the fresh start, this was the change that I needed, but of course...
And when you were making these promises to him, how did you feel about it yourself? Were you doing the, you know...
By that point, I'd convinced myself every time that I was going to change just by willpower again, but it very quickly... You know, obviously didn't work like that. I think I knew at the back of my mind.
Was there something in your conscience going, well, let's see, you know?
Well, part of me still wanted it and needed
exactly.
it. So I thought, we just moved to Spain, and within a few weeks, the bulimia got very bad again.
And do you think, would that have been now the pressure of the move and then, you know, the new surroundings and all that, would that have brought it on? Or the actual pressure you've put on yourself by promising you wouldn't do it again?
No, because by this point, it was just...
It's just a way of life, I suppose.
It didn't matter, yeah. I mean, after 14 and a half years, I was just...
You wouldn't have known any other way of carrying on.
So...
Is this quite normal, Michael? Or Michael? Martin, even?
Yeah, great. Welcome. Hello, everybody. Yep, completely normal.
It's just,
you know, up and down. It swings and roundabouts. They're just starting and stopping. New starts all the time. Making commitments to themselves, their families, their partners, their
loved
ones.
That must have been very hard in itself. Because, you know, I know myself, if I make a promise to myself, be it whatever, and then you break it, you feel so let down.
Yeah.
So this was just over and over, yeah.
But this person's been suffering with this, let's just call it a disease, for nearly 15 years at this stage. I mean, it's become automatic. It's automatic now. It's the same
it's
as
a way of
cleaning
life.
Your teeth in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Mm.
And the problem with running away and moving to different places to make new starts is that obviously you take your troubles with you.
Yeah, much as you'd want to leave them at the airport. Yeah, I know. Yeah, they follow you around, lurking in the background. Yeah. Okay. So, what brought on? Was it your partner? What brought on the South African trip?
It was getting to the point, obviously, because I hadn't seen my parents or my family because I'd been in Australia. And when they were phoning me up to contact me or my partner, they were basically asking how I was. They weren't asking about myself anymore. They were asking about my bulimia, how bad it was.
They must have been frantic with worry, though, mustn't they?
They were. We were a large family. We were very close. Yeah, they were, by this point, they were very increasingly worried about, you know, where it was going to end up.
Like, I mean, family just do that. It doesn't matter how long it goes on. You think, oh, they'll be fed up with it. But they don't. They just worry and worry and worry, don't they? Yeah.
So, and I was approaching, obviously, my 30th birthday. This has been going on 15 years. Like I said, I thought I'd hit rock bottom a lot of times, but it was sort of decided between all of us that I would go in as an inpatient somewhere, which I'd always refused. And this was like the final
yeah,
thing,
yeah.
Which finally going in, the, you know, my words, to get fixed.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And it was a big decision and a massive financial
undertaking.
Strain
yeah.
on my parents, because by this point I wasn't even working.
And where did you hear about this place?
I'd heard about it on the internet at the time. The reason why I went to South Africa, although it was very expensive, in the UK the residential treatment was just extortionate. It was just thousands of pounds.
Unbelievable for such a, you know, extreme illness that most people can't afford it then, obviously, by the sound of it.
No.
Are there any, the Social Security, do they run the NHS, do they run these things, huge queues or whatever?
They can, but there's a massive waiting list, and it tends to be dominated by sort of anorexics who are, you know, obviously force feeding on drips with bulimics.
All right, so they get
weight.
First preference.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you? You were feeling pretty nervous about this, yeah?
I was nervous, but I was very excited. In my mind, you know, residential treatment was the thing that I needed for a lot of years, and
this was going to fix you, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you headed off to Australia on your own, yeah.
So to South Africa, yeah.
Why do I keep saying that? Keep saying that. Sorry about that.
On my own.
Yeah.
I'd spoken to them quite a lot before and explained the problems. And they were confident that they could help me. Unfortunately, it wasn't what it seemed.
Okay, so tell us from the day you arrived, right? You arrived, you know. Tell us what it was like. Give me a picture of the place.
Well, it was a 12-week, 12-step program based on the 12 steps that's used for the Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous. And this had worried me before I went, but they were quite adamant that, you know, they could help me in the 12 steps way. When I got there, I was the only person. I was living in a residential house with 12 other people. And when I got there, I was the only person with an eating disorder.
Okay, right. So you had no one to confide in or to swap stories?
No, the majority of the people there were coming off heroin or cocaine.
Okay, right.
But they sort of, it's very, quite a religious, almost based, static program. And they say basically that all the program, the 12-step program, you just replace the alcohol or the drugs with food, because that was my addiction.
Yeah. So what was it like, forced feeding then?
No, when I got there...
Forced feeding in a way, in a mental way. I don't mean they're actually stuffing things down your throat. You know, was like, right, this is the time to eat, you know, or what? How did it work?
Well, when I got there, they asked me if there was it was a communal dining room. They asked me if there was any foods that I didn't want to eat and anything that I would like to eat. And I thought they were having a joke with me.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
And I basically said, okay, I don't want to eat this, this and this, meaning carbohydrates, any kind of fat, any kind of dairy. And I thought they'd immediately say, no, you know, you must
eat. They
didn't
go along with that, did they?
They did. They did. So from the start, I thought, right, I'm going to stop being bulimic by having a very strict diet and denying myself lots of things.
And even you, in your state, realised that this wasn't right, yeah?
I knew this wasn't right.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though before diet plans hadn't worked, it was just another way of controlling
what I was eating.
In sessions, I was actually advised to introduce myself in group sessions and meetings as Rachel Bulimic.
As if you didn't know.
As if I didn't know.
You weren't aware of that.
When all I was desperate to do is...
become Rachel the not bulimic.
Yeah, so they kind of reinforced my
tattooed
worst
it in your head.
Sounds
like a disaster.
It was a complete disaster. They said food was my addiction. You know, I was an addict like the rest of the people that were there. Food was my addiction and that I'd have it for the rest of my life. Unfortunately...
The rest of your life? Hang on, you've had it for the whole part.
But unfortunately, the whole program's based on abstinence and, you know, which is fine with heroin and cocaine, but when it comes to
food. They obviously hadn't done their research on bulimia by the sound of it, no?
It was the completely wrong approach, in my opinion. Yeah. And I said that to them, and after 6 weeks, they decided that they couldn't help me anymore and sent me home.
That's probably why you were the only person there with an eating disorder, because nobody...
Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, that must have been so discouraging for you, though, after, you know, getting yourself all geared up to beat this.
It was, because I really believed that this time it would work, and so did my family. And when I returned 6 weeks early, they were devastated.
Yeah. But you weren't, you know, it wasn't doing anything for you, was it? You know, did they...
It actually made me worse.
And how did you explain to them what was going on, and did they believe you, or did they kind of feel that you were, oh, well, here we go again, or...
What they said to me initially was, well, how do you want to work this? If you throw up, they decided to give me a warning system.
Oh, right.
And I said, well, it's no good... disciplining me for I don't want to throw up, but you're not doing anything to stop me help throwing up. They're just saying, well, you shouldn't do it. And I said, well, that's why I'm here. So
well, even to me, who knows nothing about it, like, you know, that just, you know, it just isn't good. So you lost, obviously you lost confidence in this course very early on, within a couple of days. So you just, how did you manage to survive the 6 weeks, I asked myself?
By purging, unfortunately, that was my coping mechanism, as I'd learnt.
And when you came back now, how did he react to the failure of this? Did he blame you in any way, or just blame the course, or what?
He was just completely helpless by that point.
Yeah.
Like, we'd all sort of been hanging on that this was the thing, this is going to work. You know, obviously he saw in me because I was so disappointed, and I was obviously blaming myself and everyone else. And we just all got to a point where we'd almost given up, I suppose.
Yeah. But, how long were you in this sort of limbo after the course, you know?
When I came back, I went back to England to sort of reassure my parents that I was okay, and I was just going to pull my socks up.
Try again,
But they'd heard it
so many times.
Because that point I was adamant that I wasn't going to try any more help.
Well, you must have lost any little bit of self-confidence you had after that, because, like, you know, this was going to fix it. This was going to sort you out. And then you must have been really low after that.
I was very low. I mean, I just didn't want to be disappointed again.
Yes, yeah.
To them, by this point, you know, there was all my family or me, so I thought, well, half-heartedly said I'll carry on looking for a solution.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to run out of time. We won't go on to the solution till next week, I'm afraid, because we're out of time here. Martin, have you got anything you want to throw in there before we head off?
No, I was just sitting listening to Rachel say that, because I know her parents, I've met both Rachel's parents. I know they spent thousands and thousands of pounds on the treatment in South Africa. Even though he was only there 6 weeks instead of the 12, and the 6 weeks didn't work, did you actually get your money back?
They're still trying to sort it out at the moment.
Is that a no, Rachel?
It's sounding like a no, unfortunately.
So I just worry about this company in South Africa. There's lots of people coming from the UK flying over there. They're spending tens of thousands of pounds and coming back after 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. But no money's changing hands. It's not coming backwards again.
It might do for, as you say, heroin addicts or alcoholics, but it certainly isn't. Yeah. It isn't for eating disorders. Like, it just sounds like so wrong. Like. Mm. Anyway, we will come back next week. And next week we will have the solution. We will have the positive, bright end of things. I've been speaking to Rachel Jameson, who's been a bulimic for the last 15 years. She's accompanied by Martin and Marion Sheeran from Elite Clinics. Just remind everybody where Elite Clinics are. Is somebody? One of you is.
Right in the centre of Fuengirola, Calle España, diagonally opposite the main post office. Very easy to find.
And as we've always said, whatever problem you have, you can go in and have a quick consultation with them. Free, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Our door's always open. Just give us a ring and we'll find a slot for you any time.
Okay, rightio. And the phone number there is 951-311-591. That's 951-311-591. And if you want to find out more about Elite Clinics, you can log on to their site. It's all the W's, eliteclinic.com. That's all the W's, eliteclinic.com. Rachel, thank you very much for coming down again this week. You're very good to share your story with us. You'll be back next week and we'll do the conclusion.
We will.
For all those people out there who are suffering from similar problems, there is light at the end of the tunnel, yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks very much, Martin and Marion as well.
Thanks for inviting us.
Okay. Thank you.
And we will have the concluding part of Rachel's stories next week.